In June of 2024, the Senate Committee on the Origin of COVID-19 made its first investigative foray into the origin of the Ebola virus outbreak, which cost more than 11,000 lives in West Africa in 2014. In its June hearing, the committee questioned Tulane University professor Bob Gary about his authorship of his Proximal Origins paper on COVID-19. But afterwards, committee members also submitted written questions, most of which concerned the 2014 Ebola outbreak. That outbreak attracted concern because it occurred far from Central Africa, where the virus normally is found. Bob Gary is very much connected to the outbreak because he's the president of the Viral Hemorrhagic Fever Consortium, a nonprofit organization with a research facility in Kenema, Sierra Leone. That facility is suspected of being the source of the 2014 Ebola outbreak, and Gary's answers to the committee's questions suggest how the virus may have ended up in West Africa. KGVM contributor David Rosenberg spoke with Jonathan Latham, the co-founder and executive director of the Bioscience Resource Project, about the possible origin of the Ebola virus and related issues.
This investigation that was held by the Congressional Committee back in the summer, how significant was that? Was that a kind of a standard procedure, or was it something more than that?
So what was going on is that Bob Gary is one of the people who's been at the focus of the question of whether there was a cover-up of the COVID-19 lab leak. And so he was there primarily for that reason. So the Senate wants to know, you know, why he was having meetings with Tony Fauci, why he published what's called the Proximal Origins paper, which is basically a publication that came out in the very early days that definitively stated that COVID did not come from a lab. And it was very, very influential, that paper. And the question before the Congress and a lot of other people has been, because essentially the paper is very definitive in its statements against the lab leak. And yet there are all kinds of conversations that were going on in the background that have come out from FOIA and that the Senate committee released, for example, basically saying that these researchers had huge doubts, and some of them even thought it was more likely to have come from a lab. But none of that is reflected in the paper, and so that's where the discontinuity and the interest comes from.
Of course, now the lab theory is more widely accepted.
Yeah, I mean, more partly because more evidence has come out in its favor. But yes, it is. And so essentially, it's become more and more of an interesting question why it is that they were so definitively against the lab leak in the first place. And so Bob Gary is basically testifying in front of the committee for that reason. But the committee also have read our investigation into Ebola virus, and they know that if the Ebola virus outbreak of 2014 in West Africa was potentially a lab leak as well. And so there's quite a lot of interesting connections between the people who covered up the COVID lab leak, you know, as part of the proximal origins discussion and in many other ways, between those people and the people who we think covered up the Ebola 2014 outbreak origin.
So what about what was going on in Sierra Leone with the two laboratories? Could you talk about that and what might have happened there?
Yeah, so going back many decades, CDC ran a lab in Sierra Leone that was basically taking samples from people who had diseases that they caught in Africa and then bringing those samples back to the U.S. So these are of interest, you know, for everybody from biowarfare people to public health. So there was a long time lab there. It was closed down when there was a civil war, and then it was reopened under the auspices of the organization that Bob Gary is the president of, the Viral Hemorrhagic Fever Consortium. So their interest is viral hemorrhagic fever diseases, and those include Ebola virus. So they were ostensibly there to study Lassa, but it becomes more and more apparent that there was an Ebola backstory in their presence there. And so we know from even back to 2010 that his organization was getting money to study Ebola virus. And they have board members who are exclusively Ebola virus researchers and so forth. So when Ebola breaks out in 2014, only 70 or 80 miles from their lab, that becomes a big question. because Ebola has never been seen in West Africa before, right? Ebola is basically a disease of Central Africa. So it's called, all of a sudden, in the interim period since their lab was set up, it's basically moved 2,000 miles north to West Africa, which took everyone by surprise.
So would that be the most plausible explanation, or are there alternative theories?
Well, there is no alternative theory that's in the scientific literature. The two possibilities would be, one is that a bat, perhaps, so Ebola is thought to have a reservoir in bats, and it may be a bat migrated from Central Africa to West Africa. But the argument against that is that, you know, why would it happen now? Like, Ebola's presumably been around forever. Why would it happen just recently? And then the other possibility is possibly a soldier or someone like that, or somebody working in Congo got infected with Ebola and then moved to West Africa. So that's also a possibility. So there are other potential explanations, but for our money, the strongest one is the lab leak. And the reason why it's so strong is that there was a company, so Viral Hemorrhagic Fever Consortium is a non-profit, but there was also a company called Metabiota that was occupying lab space at the same compound in Kenema, and they had interest in Ebola as well. And they also were collecting samples. So there are publications showing people who work for Metabiota were collecting human samples in in Central Africa, and were focusing on Ebola virus and isolating Ebola virus. And then we don't know what happened to those samples, but we do know that they had a strong interest in people who were in Central Africa as well as West Africa doing that kind of research. So that creates a strong connection between the two.
Do you know what Bob Gary's latest statement on the subject is?
Well, so he testified before the committee. And what he said in front of the committee was interesting. It wasn't picked up on at the time because it was in an appendix of the committee and a little hard to find. But what it basically says is that potentially somebody from his organization may have bought Ebola as an unconfirmed sample. So, for example, if you were just collecting blood samples in Central Africa and then you brought them up to West Africa, it's possible they might have had Ebola in them, but no one knew it, right? So you're bringing biological samples. But the other thing that he does is kind of point the finger at Metabiota, right? He basically keeps repeating over and over in his testimony that he can't vouch for what Metabiota was doing. And since we have a priori reason to suspect Metabiota, that's very interesting, right? That he should be so insistent on separating his organization from Metabiota.
And has Metabiota, or has any of its spokespeople or executives made a statement about this?
They haven't. They know that there are accusations, but they basically not said anything. And it will be nice to have them on the witness stand. I'm hoping that a Senate committee investigating COVID origins will go more into the connections with Ebola and ask Metabiota questions too.
And has Bob Gary made any statements subsequent to months ago in 2024?
I mean, after 2014, so the West African Ebola virus outbreak was 2014. And he was asked in an interview whether Ebola came from his lab at the time. And he gave a very equivocal answer. He didn't give a denial. And the same thing in the Senate testimony, right? Instead of saying, no, it didn't come from our lab, he said things like, well, we have an alternative theory of where the virus came from, which is a boy called Emil who was supposedly playing with bats, even though he was only 18 months old. So there is a, you know, the scientific establishment has a story that they're sticking to, but he didn't specifically deny that Ebola came from his lab. And that was the reason why people wanted questions, you know, answers under oath, right? Can Bob Gary be later shown to have lied under oath?
Is there a way to stop the spread of these diseases, these viruses, before they get started that has to do with labs or the shutting down of labs, as the case may be?
Yeah, I mean, I think that's a good question because there's plenty of evidence that multiple disease outbreaks come from labs. I mean, the classic one was the 1977 flu outbreak. Right. You know, when I was at school, we all got sent home because of a huge flu outbreak that basically affected people who were under about 20 years old. And the reason why the people were affected who were under 20 is that no one had been exposed to that variant of flu for 20 years. And it's now believed that that virus came from a lab in presumably northern Russia, but possibly China too. So that's a well-established scientific fact. There are many things that could be done in principle to stop virus outbreaks. You know, one of them is not to set up BSL-4 labs. So that's the highest containment type labs where people work on the most dangerous viruses and the most likely to spread out in the population, dangerous in that sense, and not to site those in big cities, right? At the moment, there's a huge building program going on around the world of people building BSL-4 labs, and yet they build them in places like Harbin and Wuhan and Boston and San Francisco. You know, so like it's madness to build these labs in these big cities. They should be in tiny little towns where they can easily be isolated from the rest of the world if something goes wrong.
And they build them in big cities because it's easier for employees to get there. What's the reasoning there?
They don't really give a reason. I mean, no one really says, but I mean, it is, you know, it's bound to be that kind of a reason, right? You know, universities. I mean, the big one that's being built in the US at the moment is being built in Manhattan, Kansas. So that is being built on the campus. It's not a big city, but it's a reasonable sized city. And the problem with that lab too is that it's going to be studying, a lot of it's going to be studying animal viruses, right? And it's in the middle of cow country. It's right in the middle of agricultural US. It's the animal version of the big city. So these labs are being built on the presumption that they're safe, the presumption that the people who work in them will be work transparently and be competent. And they're not being built on the basis of biosafety, right? Biosafety would, you know, everyone basically agrees. Everybody's recommendation or first recommendation every single time, don't build these labs in cities. But people want them on their campus. They want them there for economic reasons. You know, there's all this pressure to build them in cities. And so they get built there.
Are there countries where there is legislation preventing them from being built in cities?
No. I mean, there's very little legislation around these labs in the first place, right? That's part of the problem. I mean, in the US, there's not even a separate reporting system for lab leaks that come from BSL-4 labs. They're just all lumped in together so that no one really knows what the safety record of these labs truly is.
So really what you're saying is at any time there could be a leak that could affect a major population area.
Well, we think, I mean, as you know, I probably told you before, we have a strong indication that the COVID-19 came from the Wuhan Institute of Virology, right? There's a pretty massive amount of information of data to support that idea, and very, very little to support any other outbreak theory. So, you know, if you think about that possibility, you know, the data points we have, for example, are that on multiple occasions since COVID-19 broke out, that it's also escaped from labs that were studying it for the purpose of making vaccines and so forth. Like Taiwan, I mean, we don't know about all the outbreaks, but Taiwan had a classic escape situation because in Taiwan, the whole island was free of COVID-19 until it escaped from a lab, right, during the middle of the pandemic. So we know that these escapes happen pretty often. We know that with SARS-1, the Chinese had a lab in Beijing that they were studying SARS-1 with, studying SARS-1 in, and the virus leaked out, and they had an investigation. And when they actually invited the World Health Organization to come in and help them with the investigation, and when the World Health Organization came in, they found a separate leak happening simultaneously at the same time. So there
Oh.
was one detected leak and one undetected leak, all happening, all going on in the same lab at the same time. And so there, it seems like, you know, if you look at the evidence squarely, the likelihood of viruses escaping from these labs is really very large.
Not encouraging. Anything else you'd like to add? On an optimistic note, maybe.
You know, I wish I was studying some of these other outbreaks. You know, we have influenza, we have mpox, we have Ebola outbreaks. You know, there's too many to look into. But I think The big thing that I would say is that the virology community is a little, it's not an optimistic statement, but it's a little bit out of control. You have very little oversight of that community. You have large amounts of money, large amounts of interest, large interests at play, right? You have people who are interested in bioweapons and the Pentagon and so forth. You have a lot of pharmaceutical money. You have a lot of pharmaceutical money for vaccines. There's a strong pressure for this research to expand. And yet it's possible that it's the research itself that is in part the problem. And I wouldn't say that every virus outbreak comes from a lab, far from it. We have other important sources too, right? Like animal agriculture. Keeping large numbers of animals in very confined conditions is a not natural. It's an unnatural way to breed outbreaks too. That's every bit as scary as the lab leak scenario. That's an important take home, I think.
So there's a kind of convergence in terms of a concern for public safety with animal rights, in a sense.
Animals, it's been the concern, people's concerns over animal farming. For example, we have bird flu being bred in chickens, for example, that then spills over into the human population through farm workers and so forth. We have influenzas in cows that are spreading into people. We have all these concentrated, we have pig diseases that are spreading over into people too. So all these animal concentrated animal facilities are breeding grounds for viruses that essentially pre-adapt those viruses to humans, right? We have that big problem in the world that we need to be addressing. But what's happening is that big ag is basically redirecting those concerns to biosecurity solutions that are being used to drive small farmers out of business. So this is the flip side of it too. It's very complicated games are being played by the people running agriculture, by the people running virology, by the people running the biowarfare establishment, and so forth. And they're all trying to reap the benefits of all the money that's coming in and evade the responsibility for the blowback that they're in many cases creating themselves and know it perfectly well. So you've got a very complicated scenario going on here that would take us many conversations to unpack, but would for sure be worth it.
Yeah, so the military and business interests are kind of interfering with the science there.
In some part, you've got a scientific establishment that is its own interest group, if you like. The drive of Tony Fauci to have all this, he ends up being the highest paid bureaucrat in the US government. And it's for a reason, right? There's a huge amount of money and interest surrounding infectious diseases. And it creates a culture of corruption if there's no good oversight. And Congress hasn't been performing good oversight. And that may be changing now. That's maybe the silver lining, in all this COVID, Mpox, Ebola, shit show, for want of a better word.
That's Jonathan Latham of the Bioscience Research Project speaking with KGVM contributor David Rosenberg. This interview was released on February 19th, 2025.